Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. As I like to say, remember, it is not just a bank, it's a credit union. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. www.mecu.com.
Or they can go to
SteinerShow.org and click on that banner. So, Anthony McCarthy, who do we have in the studio here? Gregory Kane, a columnist for the Washington Examiner, visiting professor at the writing seminars at Johns Hopkins University for many, many years, columnist at the Baltimore Sun, and an old friend. Good to have him back in the studio. It's been too long.
Oh, it's a pleasure being here, Mark.
Good to see you, Gregory. Krishana Davis joins us once again. Krishana is, of course, a multi-platform journalist specializing in the fields of news, politics, and fashion. Writes for The Afro, just had a really interesting piece about the state of our cities and our neighborhoods. It was a good piece. Good to have you back in the studio.
Thank you for being here.
And Rhonda Wimbush is with us. Wimbish?
Yes.
That's it. I said I wasn't going to do it, but I did it. Wimbish is with us. Real estate broker, legislative chair for the Real Estate Brokers of Baltimore, and who ran for the city council in the 6th District.
Yes.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And you all are with us at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888.
Mark, it is a lot going on locally, politically, as well as the legislature, the General Assembly, winding down. So it's getting very busy in Annapolis as the legislators put their final touches on legislation that's coming out of the House and the Senate. Some of the bills going to conference and then ultimately will make their way, if approved, out of conference to the governor. There is a city budget, Mark, that is getting a lot of attention from our mayor. You know, she announced several weeks ago a huge, huge projected shortfall in Baltimore. She set up a commission that offered a lot of advice on how to avoid that. And she also got commissioned a huge, ultimately very expensive report out of, I think, New Jersey. To look at the finances of the city. She presented a budget, and for the most part, I think a lot of people received the budget very well. I think the Baltimore Sun called it extraordinary leadership on her part. There are things in the budget that have, however, raised a lot of questions, including pensions. The mayor right now is in some high-stakes negotiations with our fire union regarding their shifts. A lot of people saying she's playing hardball because of the tight financial times that we are in now and expected to be in for some time. She wants to lay the foundation for the way out is what her folks at City Hall are saying. It's going to be very interesting. I want our panel to join in the conversation. She's proposed some new taxes. She's also proposed to cut some property tax if we meet certain benchmarks and standards. She also wants to change the pension system for the city of Baltimore, which a lot of mayors across the country are talking about. Gregory Kane, we'll start with you, sir. A lot of people heralding and are celebrating the mayor's talk on reforming pensions. Of course, city employees, she's proposing that new employees not, in fact, buy into a pension system, but be given 401ks, which ultimately, some people say, would save the city millions and millions of dollars. Pension reform be around the country, people saying a good thing. A lot of pensioners not too pleased with the talk of reforming.
Well, yeah, that's because people don't like the goalposts being moved on them, especially when it's not in their favor. I understand the need to cut the budget and reform pensions and all of this, but, you know, the mayor's proposal to have the firefighters work 24-hour shifts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've worked 13, 14, that kind of shift when I was in the Air Force. They would have us work 3 days. We were all 4 days. 4 days off were nice, but the 13, 14, that was all I could do. Mm. You really shouldn't ask people to work 24-hour shifts. You are asking for trouble. Mm. You really are, because I don't think the whole human body was endured to made to work 24-hour shifts.
Rhonda Wimbish. I said I wasn't going to do it.
Just call me Rhonda.
Rhonda,
call me Rhonda.
You are. You
Sorry,
have your
Rhonda.
Ear to the ground in your community. What are people saying about this budget?
Well, I just don't have my ear to the ground in my community. I'm at City Hall often, mm-hmm. and I think that people like myself in the community think it's crap. I think most.
Tell us what you really think about that.
I think that when you have a mayor that presents a budget and says we've got to close a $30 million deficit, and an hour before she proposed this in a press conference, there was $23 million loss that was stated at the Board of Estimates for parking, $32 million loss for water, and $52.6 million loss for wastewater. So none of that is addressed in the budget on how you're going to recoup the money that you lost. And where is it? I was told by the auditor that it was put in the wrong category, and they can't find it. So how can you expect the citizens of Baltimore to accept your idea of a $30 million loss when you've got a $200 million loss? And that doesn't include the $9.5 million that's missing from the homeless fund.
Krishana, your thoughts. A lot of folks saying we have to reform pensions. A lot of people obviously we have to cut government spending. Rhonda just pointed out there may be some mismanagement and waste taking place right inside of government. Give us your thoughts as the mayor proposes a new budget with a vision going forward about 10 years. She said that she really wants to lay the groundwork for whomever is the next mayor to be able to fiscally manage the city of Baltimore.
So I think this whole new urban story that the mayor is pushing is really interesting. She's taking a 10-year long-term approach at looking at, you know, the future of Baltimore. So, you know, she had this consulting company from Philly come down and take a look and see what's going on. And it was Baltimore, Philly, Miami, D.C., and Pittsburgh were all staked at being places that potentially could be liable for state takeovers. So I think she kind of didn't have a choice but to make, you know, drastic changes in Baltimore because, quite frankly, the city's going to face bankruptcy. So the things that she decided to take cuts from are really interesting. I think that, you know, there's going to be some upheaval from, you know, city workers. They're going to have issues with the pension. And what's really interesting with the firefighters is that they're already working 2 hours longer a day than most other parts in Maryland. And then on top of that, you know, their salary is about 16 to 20% less than surrounding firefighters in Maryland as well. So that will really be interesting to see how, you know, the unions will feel about it going forward.
Mark, in addition to this idea of the 24-hour shifts, which an arbitrator has been trying to bring the mayor and the firefighters closer together and is failing miserably in trying to hammer out some sort of negotiation or some sort of deal. Give me your thoughts, because I know that a lot of people have written, cities have given away these great deals on pensions, and they can't afford them anymore, so they've got to do something.
Well, I mean, I think
rather than not pay the pensions.
It's a very difficult situation. Mm-hmm. Every city in America is facing what the city's facing. Baltimore's not alone. This is happening everywhere. And I think that one of the things that the mayor and all mayors should be doing, I mean, they have to deal with what's in front of them, but none of them are looking at the larger picture about why it's happening and what they should be fighting for in the larger sense. Let's take this 401k thing. This 401k thing is the founder of 401ks, Ted Benna, had this long thing where he said, look, 401ks were meant to supplement your retirement, not to be your retirement.
To be your retirement, yeah.
And so what's happening with private industry and public sector is they're turning 401ks into our retirement. And they weren't meant to be our retirement. They can't even come close to being our retirement. So that's part of the issue here. And I think that cities are underfunded. Our tax system is antiquated. I mean, we keep talking about who we should tax. Now, there was programs we've done on the show, shows we've done this program numerous times. Am I still plugged in? Anyway, so I just can't hear things in the head, but anyway, no big deal. Let's take property taxes. Property taxes are now based on a city versus city and county.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is totally backwards and from a bygone era. There should be one state property tax, period, divided up between the localities so that there's more equal funding throughout the state. The city like Baltimore cannot survive on its property tax base. It just is not going to happen. We're not going to entice our way out of this in terms of bringing 10,000 more upper middle class people in, whatever that means. I don't think that's going to happen either. I think these are very tough questions to ask. And I think that the whole idea of making firemen work 24-hour shifts, it's just, I mean.
Good luck with that.
It's crazy.
But as much as we say it's crazy, it's happening in other cities where she pointed out, and I forget the names of the other cities, but there are cities that already work their firefighters in 24-hour shifts.
Yes, and they'll come to regret that down the road. Trust me.
Should we go to the phones? Yeah. What do our listeners think? 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on all this. And Mike in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. Is that me, Mon?
Yeah,
you're on
Mike.
The air?
Hey, Mike Scott here, guys.
Equity. Hey, Mike.
You said the big picture, Mark, and I think what's really going on is that the American social compact is unraveling. And, you know, that's really got to be dealt with when we talk about racism. It's not, again, the pointy hood kind. It's looking at when we say otherism, right? So are we making decisions with all of our budgets thinking about people as one of us or one of them? And, you know, recently the Office of Budget came out with a study that showed that African Americans are 22% of the poor, 12% of the population, but only take 14% of all the benefits, whereas white Americans are, taking 69% of all the benefits. And yet you would think that when we talk about other or welfare queen, all these things, you know, other images come to mind. So until we start to understand who's in the boat with us, how our values then come through budgets, we're not going to solve any of this stuff. Because the social compact is unraveling because of our belief systems and not our fact or evidence driven decision making. So I talked about root causes, and I just wanted to put that out there.
Well, and let me just throw this out to you, back at you, Mike. I think that when you say that 69% of the budget being used by white America, let's break that down, because we're talking about, if you're talking about the people who control most of the wealth in America, it means that the vast majority of even white Americans are not participating in the wealth of this country, that the entire package is skewed. I don't know if you saw David Stockman's piece in New York Times this weekend, but it was a very really interesting piece, and it was a piece about why we, and he's Reagan's budget director, about how we've undercut our country completely, and that we have a system in crisis, not just Baltimore City, the entire system is in crisis. That's the problem. So the mayor has to deal with their stuff, but they also have to address the larger causes and be fighting for something.
But Mark, when we address the budget and we say, okay, this is a budget, it sounds like everything is above board. Like we really plan on an even playing field here. We're not playing on an even playing field. We're talking about money that's being misappropriated that has put us in this position. For example, I have here a water bill that was paid for $560,000 for one rec center that doesn't have a pool for half of a year. Here it is right here. The average water bill for this rec center, the most has been $5,000. So you have one department, the Department of Public Works, Department of Recs and Parks, paying the Department of Public Works $560,000. But yet an old lady will lose her house for a $350 water bill.
But did they actually pay that bill?
Did they pay that bill?
Yes, it's paid. On December the 28th, 2012, the bill
That's
was
nonsense.
Paid. $560, it's here right here if you want to see it. And we have people losing their properties for situations like this. I believe these acts are intentional. I don't believe anyone put money in the wrong category. I don't believe it was accidentally paid a water bill. I don't believe we're playing on an even playing field in Baltimore City. And that's because we're an unincorporated city, that we don't have any other laws that we have to abide by. I mean, sure, we've got the state, but we don't have – most cities have to follow county ordinances. We don't. So things get through that shouldn't get through, including the property tax sales that have never been legislated in Baltimore City for 30 years, but yet properties are taken.
Well,
so we're not playing fair.
So when you say you think it's intentional, what do you mean you think it's intentional?
I think it's intentional that a $560,000 water bill. Why wouldn't someone say this is crazy? Why are we playing this? I think it's intentional when you have articles that said lawyers conspire to rig tax bills and our city solicitor says, yeah, but we're going to keep working closely with them. I think it's intentional when we've got $52.6 million lost in wastewater, $32 million in water, and $23 million in parking revenue. How is this possible? You're going to say that we've got to accept all of these millions of dollars being missing year after year. Here's 2012. Millions slip away from city. This was never addressed in the 2013 budget. These are taxes that weren't paid, that weren't paid. I'm going to tell you what wasn't in the budget. A commuter tax that would bail us out. A special tax for developers that would bail us out.
Well, I'm not so sure I agree that the commuter tax would bail us out. I think that that's...
Oh, it would.
Well, I don't think so. Because I think that...
More than 40% of the residents, right, employees come across city lines
for free. And a lot of people go from the city to work for the state in Annapolis, go work for in Anne Arundel County, go work in Montgomery County, work in Howard County, work in D.C. So it can work too many ways. I mean, it can take money out as well as put money in. And I think commuter taxes really have never worked anywhere. I mean, they don't function well because everybody can do it to everybody else, and just, you know, so it doesn't kind of even itself out. And I don't know. Well, we'll see what our listeners think and what y'all think. I mean, whether or not we think it's intentional or not. I mean, I think that when we talk about wastewater, I mean, I'd like to know more about that. We're talking about wastewater that's because the infrastructure's not working right. And we're losing money that way? How are we losing the money?
No. They said that they put it in the wrong category. The auditor for the comptroller stated that the Department of Finance listed the money in the wrong category for all three of those entities with those millions of dollars. I believe it comes to $200 million, and they don't know where the money is. Mm-hmm. And that was at the Board of Estimates 2 weeks ago. And last week, the Board of Estimates stated that the reason that the retirees' plan isn't working is because Baltimore City made bad real estate investments in 2010. They've got to be the only people that kept investing in real estate when everyone else said, we're not going to do it anymore. So $2.1 million was lost, and that's not even talking about the $681 that they propose will be lost.
I think those twins named Heike and Pikey are on the scene, whether anything's intentional or not. Something's not right with what the figures Ron is saying, and we need to get to the bottom of it.
Everybody's lost my words. I mean, this was publicly stated
at the
Board of Estimates by the auditor that works for Comptroller Joan Pratt.
Well, I mean,
no one disputed it.
Right. So, I mean, all I'm saying is I hear those numbers thrown out. I don't know what those numbers mean. I'm not saying they aren't real. They may be real. There's a lot more that I'd have to know to kind of accept them just because somebody from Joan Pratt's office said it. I mean, I would have to...
No, it wasn't from... It was an audit.
Yeah, I understand.
It was an audit done, so it's not just Joan Pratt's office.
I'm not saying they're not right. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm saying that I need to know a lot more before I can...
Well, here's the Board of Estimates agenda. I'll be happy to leave it with you. And also...
Wait a minute.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that it could be real. But we've also heard from Joan Pratt's office, they don't have enough people in their office to even do the audits properly.
Well, they just hired people. That was also, the mayor gave them more money to hire people, so that problem has been resolved.
Well, actually not, because that was just a few months ago when they said that, and they couldn't have done this in a few months.
Yes, they did. They did a big public thing for people to, they were looking for accountants, it was publicly
I think
that.
What no. Mark is saying, though, is that the audit that you're referring to, did they do that in the months that since they hired
these
audits?
Oh, no, these were audits they had already done.
Okay.
They had already done audits. The mayor was saying that the comptroller didn't do audits. The comptroller had done audits. But the audits that people were asking for, Rex and Parks, Department of Finance, Department of Housing, which we would love to see the numbers from the Department of Housing.
Yes.
They were saying, we don't have the manpower to do those audits. But these audits were done already.
There's a whiff of rodent in the air.
Now, when it goes through the Board of Estimates and they approve the agenda, all of these losses were approved. So it's not that, you know, it's something that needs to be investigated. The agenda is researched before it's put forth. Everyone approved the agenda, you know, which is president of city council.
And I'm not here trying to defend Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake or this administration. What I'm saying is, for me, I mean, I've been around doing this long enough to know that a lot of numbers are thrown out by lots of people from the Board of Estimates or whoever else. But until I see the details myself and understand them, I don't accept anything at face value. So those numbers could be very real. They could be telling a different story. I don't know what they say. I do know that we need audits in Baltimore City, that's a bill that was watered down by the city government and the city council. that we need to get to the bottom of where the money is in the city. There's no question about that in my mind at all.
Well, but I do sit in the informal audit hearings, and this water bill that I'm talking about that came from Department of Public, the Recs and Parks, so that is the task audit. This wasn't in there.
Who paid the bill?
The Department of Public Recs paid it to DPW. So, and it was not in their audit, and their audit needed to be turned in by December the 31st, and it was, and this bill was paid on December the 28th, so it didn't even show in their audit as an unpaid bill.
I'm just amazed that $500,000.
Over half.
Yeah. Over $500,000 could be paid from one agency to the other, and no one have raised any question marks about that.
Right.
So also in that budget, it wasn't no cuts to city council. With them gassing their cars or reimbursement of dinners and anything from the mayor's office or the directors. I mean, all that money stayed the same. But it's got to come out of my trash. I got to pay for trash. I got to pay for somebody to pick up my trash now.
I would be very interested to hear what the listeners have to say.
410-319-8888, unless other guests want to jump in. Donald, you're on the air.
Good evening, everyone. How are you?
Donald. Hi, Donald. Welcome.
Very interesting conversation. Way overdue. I can say for someone who has been on the fringes of what's been happening as far as Baltimore City government for years, you know, I stayed on the fringes until I met Rhonda Winbish at one of the town hall, mayor town hall meetings. And life hasn't been the same since. She's a very special person, and you know real and genuine when you hear it, when you see it. So, and I work with her on her campaign, and I don't even vote, okay? It says something about someone when someone like myself do not participate in the process, gets behind someone and hits the street and go door to door and get to see the problems that's really happening in the city. And there are a lot of disparities that are happening inside Baltimore City. And at some point, it has to be address the historical racism, the historical white supremacy, the historic segregation that takes place in Baltimore City, not just with people, but when we come talking about its services.
Well, Donald, make the connection for us. You just use some very inflammatory language about racism, conspiracy. Make the connection for us, city services and racism. I'm just trying to understand where you're coming from.
Well, it's not that difficult to...
It's obviously difficult enough that I've asked you to explain
it. I understand why you quit asking the question like that. When we look at historical segregation in Baltimore City and the shifting and the movement of people, you're dealing with sociology and all that kind of those kind of things. So there's a lot of factors that we have to look at. We look at the historical contamination of black people dealing with segregation housing in Baltimore City with lead poisoning, because we know we go to East Side or the West Side of Baltimore, we know generations of families who never left that particular area. They just moved from block to around the corner. Mm-hmm. So, and we know that, and like the 9th Councilmatic District, these 40%, 49% of the households are renters in that particular area. So this is slumlord housing. That's why the majority of the Baltimore City housing is boarded up, because of the contamination and other factor, health, environmental factors we have to live with. So it's a lot involved in this discussion as far as the disparity in services. And the at this point, just the blatant disregard for the poor, the black poor in particular, and the white
elderly.
Poor. So in the seniors just getting smashed in the city behind these water bills.
All right, Donald, we have to take a break here.
Yes, sir.
It is that time of the hour, halfway through, 410-319-8888. Come back to our guests in a moment. Don't go away. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we are here with Rhonda Winbish, real estate broker, legislative chair for the Real Estate Brokers of Baltimore, who ran for city council in the 6th District. Krishana Davis is back with us, multi-platform journalist specializing in the fields of news, politics, and fashion, who writes for the Afro-American, Baltimore Afro-American. And Gregory Kane's with us, a columnist for many years for the Baltimore Sun, now the Washington Examiner, and a visiting professor at the writing seminars at Johns Hopkins University. 410-319-8888 is the number. Let's go right to the phones, then we'll move into whatever area you have in your mind.
Let's talk
Anthony?
Gas taxes. That's what I want to talk about.
Let's do that. Michael, you're on the air.
Yes.
Hey, Michael.
Hi. I just phoned because this issue and this discussion has been an age-old issue, and I apologize, but I disagree with some of the guests, you know, seem to think it's just an issue of corruption, mismanagement. It's a biggest issue that is going on here is our priorities, our social system that puts people's needs, doesn't put people's needs before profit. And until we look at things in a different light, we'll be, you know, addressing this issue over and over and over again. It won't go away. You know, until we have a different perspective of how things should be run, you'll have this issue for always. And it's not just about race, not just about class, it's about all of that. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that the entire system is being called into question in this country. And we're going to be talking about it later on in the week, where we're going to look at David Stockton's article from the conservative end of the spectrum, analyzing money in America and where it's gone. Time magazine had a piece. Saying maybe Karl, this is Time Magazine writing, maybe Marx was right about his interpretation
they
of
say
capitalism.
This 45 years after the Black Panther said it, there's a heck of a time to come to that conclusion, Mark. Panthers were there 45 years ago.
As we all know.
Yeah.
There are some questions. The larger issues have to be addressed here that go beyond Baltimore City. And I think we're going to try to do that this week in the course of this program and bring some people on to kind of do that both philosophically and pragmatically in terms of economics. But right now, gas tax, Mr. McCarthy.
You know, it was interesting, Mark, for those of us who follow the legislature, and I haven't been as active down there reading and watching as I normally am, but I found it fascinating. I'm sure Rhonda and Greg and Krishana were watching as well. As the gas tax was debated in the Senate, it was amazing to watch as Republicans in the legislature, whose numbers are, you know, aren't super strong in the Senate, but they were able to really, really gum up the works there for a while with the Democrats in the Senate, adding amendment after amendment after amendment, trying to slow down this gas tax. And they, you know, when I talked to some of the leaders, including Nancy Jacobs and others, they said really they knew that they could not stop the gas tax. But what they could do was slow it down to let the people of Maryland really begin to understand what it means to raise this particular tax, although it hasn't been raised in decades.
It has not. Exactly.
It has not been raised in decades. And the money is going to be, according to the Democratic leadership, it's going to be locked this time where it cannot be raided, and that these dollars will go for infrastructure and transportation in the state of Maryland. And that's why we need this tax. Now, some people, and I want to get Rhonda's take and Greg and Krishana's take, some people say, Mark, that this tax tied to inflation could raise to about 23, 24, 25 cents in the state of Maryland, depending on how the economy's going. And so a lot of people are very, very concerned. At this point, however, it is a done deal. The governor, of course, it was one of the planks in his platform this year, so he has no problem signing this legislation. Gregory Kane, what do you think?
Well, I think that, you know, the people of Maryland who voted for O'Malley deserve this tax. Those of us who voted for someone else don't deserve it. But those of us who voted for O'Malley do, because they believed his okey-doke in 2010 when he tried to claim that, you know, a fee was a tax, and claim the earliest one to do nothing but raise taxes and raise fees. Then he gets elected and he raises both, then tries to sock it to us with the gas tax. Much like, you know, they bought Greg Bernstein's okey-doke in 2010 about what a bad state's attorney Patricia Jessamy was. Then this guy commits a major Brady violation in a major case in his first 2 years in office.
and we can.
So talk they deserve
about,
him too.
We can talk about that, but at another time. But I am very curious about this tax. Is there any argument to be made, Rhonda, Krishana, and Mark, that we need it? I mean, we've gone a very long time without raising this particular tax.
If the gas tax was proposed without it being for the roads and infrastructure, I think I would feel better about
really?
It. Really? Because we've already given money for that. And the money was diverted. So for you to come back, it's no different in the city. You took some money, it disappeared, and now you want it again. So because it was for that reason, I've got a problem with it. Mm-hmm. And I agree with the people who voted for O'Malley. I don't think he was I think he's who he is. And I'm a Democrat, and I was very hurt that the people that I was siding with in Annapolis were the Republicans. And I find myself to be siding with the Republicans a lot in Annapolis.
Krishana?
I think what's really interesting is to see if Baltimore, is transportation becoming a luxury in Baltimore? Because we have these the gas tax that make that is going to come. And then we also have things like the circulator, which doesn't necessarily, you know, go in some of your more poor, economically challenged areas. On top of the fact that we have a lot of these mobile speed cameras that are coming. So it seems like people are getting hit a lot as far as transportation is concerned in Baltimore. And it makes me a little leery how will, you know, with poverty, with 22% of the population in Baltimore being under the poverty level, how would they be impacted?
Go ahead, Mark.
I think that there's, I mean, let me take the other side for a moment. we have not, there's not been a rise in the gas tax in what, 20?
No, it's been longer than that. Maybe
40 years.
40 years.
40 years. If they raise it, with the say they're going to raise it, it's an extra $600 million a year in revenue for this for the state, and the state's bleeding. And B, the federal gas tax has not been raised as well, and we alone among developed nations on the planet Earth have low gas taxes. The price of gas and oil in America is the cheapest of any country
in the developing
world.
That's true.
Cheaper than any country in the world. And we have the worst infrastructure in terms of transportation system of any country in the developed world, whether it be Japan or worse than South Korea, you know, worse than any place in Europe. So, you know, if we're going to be serious about, as a country, is about not just, Maryland can't do this alone, but if we're going to be serious as a country about weaning ourselves off from fossil fuels, forcing smaller cars that have better gas mileage, more hybrid cars, building public transportation to get people out of their cars, then we got to pay for it. And we got to kind of, and the only way we can do it is to force gas taxes up to get people to change the way we do transportation.
But didn't we already pay for it, Mark?
No, we did
yes,
not.
Yes, we did.
What did we pay for?
We already were taxed. We already received an increase for infrastructure of roads, and that money went somewhere else.
No, it didn't go somewhere. That's not true. The money, the fund, that trust fund was raided. That's a mistake.
Okay, well, what does raided mean? It went somewhere else.
But the money we've spent in the city, in the state, I mean, we have a boondoggle. Like the state spent it on that cross-county connector. That you know, you get on the cross-county connector down in Prince George's County and Montgomery County, you can go as fast as you want because nobody uses it. That was a boondoggle. Building that cross-county connector instead of building rail. I mean, years ago, when William Donald Schaefer was first mayor, he could have done what Washington, D.C. did, and he said no, which is to build a massive subway system in the Baltimore metropolitan area. If we had built that massive subway system, we'd be in a different place right now. Now we can't build it.
But, Mark, is there an argument to be made? I keep asking this of folks because, you know, there's something inside of me, being a citizen of the city of Baltimore, one of the heaviest tax jurisdictions in the country. Is it, I guess, an argument to be made that, yes, maybe the gas tax is the direction to go in, but is it right for right now? Given, as you said, we're hemorrhaging. I mean, we are really in trouble. I'm not sure. The tax will generate enormous revenue.
Right.
But it's revenue that we're going to eat up real fast.
Well, we had a tweet here from Tony McConkie, who writes in, the governor created a crisis by taking money out of the trust fund, then used the lack of money to justify new taxes, which is what you were just saying.
But he didn't do anything. He certainly got pretty far without me defending
him. Well,
Ehrlich
did the same thing.
That's right. I was going to say that the
Ehrlich
previous
started
administration
the raid.
Didn't do.
O'Malley finished the raid. on the Transportation Trust Fund, without a doubt. and our listeners think? 410-319-8888. Will, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. This is Will Hanna.
Tell the voice. Hey, Will.
Hey. I think that one of the issues that had not been addressed in raising the gas tax supposedly for transportation purposes is we had not identified the issue of waste that already goes on at the Department of Transportation. And I think that we should not have voted for an increase in the gas tax without having looked at what has already been wasted at the department and then audit those agencies that handle those transportation funds and then identifying where those funds that were rated, where those funds went, so that it's almost like we need to address the problem before we get ourselves into another situation that we can't fix and then the tax is already in place. There are a lot of things that already come to the transportation fund, and there are other things that already are in place in the city of Baltimore that are to raise funds for infrastructure, such as the new stormwater utility, such as the red light and speed cameras, all those types of things. So I think we look at the issue of waste before we decide that we're going to raise a tax and impose a tax on the people of the state of Maryland.
I agree.
More thoughts?
If you tell me that, you know, you're going to raise the gasoline tax and, you know, because it doesn't bother me, I just have the option of driving less, which I prefer to do anyway. Specifically, if you're talking about me driving anywhere down in the D.C. area, because, you know, I just don't do that. Uh-huh. It's just not done on my part.
But Mark is right in that if we do raise this tax, maybe it will force our hands and we will begin to make better decisions about transportation. Not only the citizens, but maybe even the legislature will then start prioritizing transportation options like rail and others.
If we say we're raising this tax to build infrastructure, we better darn well build infrastructure. Because I'm saying outright. Exactly. If it's not used for that, somebody should go to jail. I don't care who it is.
So you think after you have the money, you're going to go back and fix the problems that's already happening? There are some problems there. It's waste. Mm-hmm. It's been waste. And not only is the gas tax, there's also going to be transit fees that are raised, too, which are going to really affect the underserved.
Yes,
but as we continue to talk about these mass transit projects, I think we have so many projects that are already in place that have failed. I mean, overwhelmingly, we've put the transportation projects out and we come up with these ideas and these schemes that will help to alleviate traffic and, you know, give people a better way to move about the city. And time again, they aren't utilized and they're not in the best neighborhoods to put them in so that people can use them efficiently and effectively. So I guess to me, to increase gas taxes for mass transit projects, you know, what does that mean?
That's a good question. And that's a question I think has to be answered. What do those things mean? I mean, I mean, look at the Red Line.
And I think that one of the projects. I
mean, the Red Line is, the Red Line is, to me, after looking at it a lot and talking to people in different neighborhoods, especially on Edmondson Avenue and mm-hmm. Canton, right?
Yes.
Who both oppose the way they're doing it, is that, they're not taking into account what people need in these projects. And B, it's just a trolley going across the tracks above ground. If you want high-speed rail, there's only one place to put it. That's under the ground. Otherwise, it's not going to go fast. Yes.
And on top of that,
look at the we call it the white snail, the light rail.
Light rail.
I mean, it's the slowest thing in the planet. That's why nobody.
You can catch it. You can actually run up and catch it.
But in addition to that, Mark, the decrease in property value with that construction for that lengthy period of time, neighborhoods that are already struggling, they're going to start doing construction to go through these neighborhoods and devalue these neighborhoods with no compensation to those residents. Yeah. I think that's a serious concern.
Yep.
But, Rhonda, I would give you some pushback on that because a lot of these communities, and I agree with you, are communities that are already underserviced. The property values are already low, devalued. So I'm not sure if the impact will be as great as we're thinking on those property values. I'm not sure if those communities – those properties are hot properties.
Well, it doesn't matter if they're hot properties. Somebody owns them, mm-hmm. and it's a value to someone.
And so if we devalue that through that construction, they'll be paying less property taxes.
Correct? It doesn't matter. I mean, I don't think property taxes are their issue. Their property taxes are
prominent. Well, it is a issue. Yes,
no,
it is.
But I'm just saying in that particular neighborhood, the problem is in those areas – is board up houses, is crime, is rats.
That's right.
That's their problem.
Already devalued property.
property tax, they're going to say those are the three things first. So now you're going to run a train, you're going to do construction that's going to create more rats, and it's a train that's not going to benefit the community. It's going to benefit people being brought into the city to hopefully spend money that hasn't worked for Baltimore City yet.
410-319-8888. Chris, you're on the air.
Morning, guys.
Hey, Chris. Welcome.
So I actually wanted to chime in on the red line, and I actually happened to disagree with the last panelist. I think it's actually going to be a really good thing, especially for where I live in West Baltimore, where we have no connection to the transit system, really, other than buses, which are always late, and, you know, have really irregular schedules. And I think something like the Red Line A is projected to create somewhere near 10,000 jobs. B, it provides a connector from west to east that doesn't currently exist. And if you look at the jobs piece is a big deal, especially when you're talking about, you know, we have a shortage of jobs that low-skilled workers. I mean, you're going to have people who can work at the station in the construction process. And there's been a lot of work done to highlight, for example, in the Sandtown community, to highlight, you know, the artwork and sorts that, you know, people locally have. They're going to have, you know, a lot more ownership over the station. And also coming up Evanston Avenue, there is going to be compensation for people who live along that route. And that's exactly where I live. With regards to, you know, upgrading the fronts, streetscaping, replacing the sidewalks, trash cans. I mean, this, you know, I drive up there every single day, and these are things that absolutely need to be done. And when we talk about, you know, people being able to get around the city and what that means to everyone's lives, I mean, if your bus runs late and you can't make it there, but there's a rail option that can get you there much faster, we're talking about not only employment opportunities for people working at the station, driving the trains, but also expanding the scope of where young workers can actually get to work and that kind of thing.
But the bus running late is one of the problems. That's a transit problem, son. Excuse me, sir. That's a transit problem. That's why with this gas tax and the transit fees, these are the problems that need to be addressed now before we have to pay more. Well, bus runs late because there's a mass transit problem.
Well, the bus runs late because we don't have enough buses. B, the way the streets are clogged all the time. I mean, if I had my way, there'd be no cars in the city. You would ban all of them. You park on the outside, take a bus or rail in, and take it from there. Ride your bicycle, get out of your car. I mean, we have it. If you look at cities around the world, in Bogota and other cities in Latin America, they have created bus systems. They can't afford to put rail in. They created bus systems that go fast. There are two lanes. One takes a regular bus route, and the other is a faster bus route with fewer stops. Pick people up, keep going, and the platforms are raised so people walk right into the bus and it keeps on going. And we need a system that gets people out of their cars and moves around the city. But that takes money. And we've got to get the money from somewhere to do it, or we're going to be having the same story 60 years from now. So I mean I think that you've got to we can't just it's not just a matter of corruption. Corruption's too I mean it's we point fingers saying corruption, but I don't think it's corruption. I think it's just the plotting system and its own inertia that has to be overcome.
I think it's basic math that we're saying it's not. I mean, maybe we need to give our revenue, maybe we need to give it to our students and let them figure the numbers out, because our elected officials aren't doing it, our administrators aren't doing it, our directors aren't doing it. It's basic math of adding numbers that are causing a deficit.
That's absolutely not true. I mean, I just don't agree with you. I mean,
Put money in the wrong category?
No. The reason we are facing deficits is because we've decided that we're not going to have a society that's going to take care of the things that we need. When John F. Kennedy became president, he lowered the tax rate on corporations and the top income levels from 90% to 70%. Now it's down to maybe 30%. We don't have enough revenue to take care of what society needs. That's why we're running deficits. We're running deficits because we have wars in Iraq and Afghanistan that cost us trillions of dollars. That's why we have deficits. That's why there's no more money being left for the federal government to give money to localities to do what we have to do. So it's not just moving the numbers around. There's not enough money in the state and city budgets to begin with to make things work.
But if you have more money missing, that's the deficit. If you've got $30 million as a deficit, right, and $200 million missing, I'm not talking all over the country. I'm just talking Baltimore City. This is where I reside. This is where I struggle.
But it's trickle down, and I don't accept the numbers until I know what those numbers mean. That doesn't say they don't exist, but I want to know what those numbers mean.
And I think, Mark, what you're saying is, for the most part, that there's a structural, infrastructural issue, though, still with the way that we manage funds in general. But I think that in the back end, sometimes just taxing the regular people is over the period of time, it's just not working. We've done it time and time again, and we keep seeing the same results. A lot of these people can't pay. I mean, people are getting pushed out of the city because they can't pay a lot of these taxes. So that's my only thing, is just that, not to say that the money isn't needed, but it's where we're getting it from.
And I think that you, I when you talk about $52 million in water infrastructure, they don't know where it is. Where is it? I mean, it didn't go into somebody's pocket. It was spent somewhere. Or the money is it's not sitting in a bank account, I'm sure. So where is it? What did it get spent on is what I want to know.
Well, when I see the mayor's 10-year plan, when I read it and hear it, and I listen to the budget 2013, 2014, I've already read this in a book 6 years ago called Baltimore Unbound. The book was written in 1995, but the whole scheme of things have already been written. I bought the book here in case anybody wants to look at it. The Rewrite Baltimore has already been written in this book.
You're talking about who wrote, which book is that?
It was published by the Able Foundation.
Oh, I remember this
book.
But
Dave Ross wrote the book, and it apologizes for his racial overtone at the beginning of the book. Everything that we're seeing, this Rewrite Baltimore that we're seeing, that's costing millions of dollars to go around the city and talk about, this thing was written years ago.
Right.
And they're acting like it's a new thing. Oh, look, we're going to rewrite Baltimore. Well, in 1995, they said they was going to rewrite Baltimore, and it's the same exact plan.
Right.
It's a snow job.
No, I agree. I remember Baltimore Unbound very well, and the book.
And that's the 10-year plan. I found it in here.
The 10-year plan done 17 years ago. Right. I haven't seen that book in years.
There you go.
It's been a long time since I looked at that book. Because I remember David Rusk was on the show talking about that book.
That's the Bible for the Greater Baltimore Committee. That's the Bible.
Mawani, you're on the air.
Hello?
Mawani?
Hello. Hi, Mawani, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm here. How
welcome.
Are you?
Very well. Yes. Welcome.
Well, I've been listening to the conversation. I know you switched topics quite a bit, but, you know, as a Baltimore resident, what disappoints me the most, and don't get me wrong, I love Baltimore City. I think the city has more potential than where it's at now. But what concerns me as a homeowner is, you know, what some people commented about is, you know, the services that are being provided to the residents, yet, you know, what disappointed me was to hear Rawlings Lake wants to increase taxes. Martin O'Malley is adding another tax. BGE just got a rate hike approved. You know, the water infrastructure, they're trying to raise that. It's just too much for the residents. So, I mean, if we're trying to really keep residents here, keep residents interested in building the city up, you know, when every time you turn on the news, it's another tax, another raise, another hike, it's really disappointing. And my thing is, with all the money that I pay to be a resident in the city, mm-hmm. be it for parking, be it for property tax, be it for whatever the case may be, there's nothing to show for it. The roads look horrible. The homes are dilapidated. You know, you see water main breaks everywhere. Even for me, purchasing a community development project, I won't get into it, but that was a nightmare as well. And as a resident needing service from the city, I don't see any resolve or any action on behalf of any of the elected officials. So, you know, there was a point brought up with money being spent, there's no accountability. You know, that's, to me, I agree with the one caller, we need to figure that out first. You know, tolls were raised. Why is it that another gas tax is necessary? Like, where are the numbers going? To me, the numbers aren't making sense. Like, yes, we need to improve our infrastructure. Yes, we need to improve our water lines. Yes, Baltimore City has, like, the worst roads I've ever seen. But at the end of the day, we're paying a significant amount in taxes everywhere you turn. So at some point, when is enough going to be enough?
Right. No, I hear you. And though I would say the roads in Pennsylvania are a lot worse than the roads we have here. But, and that part of them is because they even tax less. And so they have fewer people working on the roads. But I think you're right. I mean, I think that, you know, part of what we're doing here today, and I was playing a little bit of the opposition because I had to make it kind of more lively and interesting rather than get along, go along. So I had to kind of push the ideas. But there are a lot of questions that have to be answered. We have to answer, where is this money going in the city? Where did it disappear and where did it go? How was it spent instead of being spent the way it was supposed to? And I think that asking people who are retired, who are pensioners, to live in fear they're going to lose the money they have, lose the benefits they have, is ridiculous. We already have tens of thousands of people in the state of Maryland who have lost their benefits, steel workers or more, and that's a crime in itself, to take something out of the people who have worked so hard to make it work. So I think a lot of questions have to be answered, and I'm looking forward to answering them more. And I really, Krishana, it's always great to have you in the studio. Krishana Davis.
Thank you for having me.
Great to see you, Gregory Kane.
It's a pleasure being here, Mark.
My dear friend, good to have you back in the air with us. And Rhonda Wimbish. You'll
have
come
me
back.
I will.
Good, because you're good. I like it. You have, you're alive, and you have a lot to say. So it's good to have you on the air with
Thank
us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Anthony, you're not going anywhere, though.
I'm not going anywhere, brother. I can't get rid of me that easy.
Not that easy. You've got to stay with me here. On the way out to our next hour, we're going to talk about the battle over guns. In the state legislature. Mm. Have a roaring debate with that. Remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is sponsored in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's National Foreclosure Settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or 877-462-7555. We'll be right back.